Fill up in the hot house, the podcast that goes bump in the night.
Everybody, welcome back to Hauntheads, the podcast that goes bump in the night. I'm your host, Janine Mercer. As usual, I'm joined here by my podcast buddy, Mimi Steven. I thought that we would start this week by discussing the worst place that we had ever been, or the worst place that we had been stuck, in honor of the story that I have for you guys about Black River Falls, Wisconsin. And the fact that a lot of the settlers there in the 1800s, purchased land and were kind of stuck there. So I'd have to say probably the worst place that I've ever been was Camp Argonaut in New Brunswick.
What is that?
For a short time, I was in the Army Cadet Corps of Canada. And it was one of those requirements in order to gain, a higher level, then you had to go away and you had to do like either a 2-week or a 6-week training.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was too old for the 2-week training because all the people who were going on, they called it 2-weeky. So all the people who were going on 2-weeky were like, 10, 11 years old. And I was like 13 or 14 years old.
Okay.
And so my major at the time told me, you have to go on the 6-weeky. You can't do the 2-weeky. And I was like, oh, God, really? Because I'm kind of a homebody.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to stay close to familiar things. Because it makes me comfortable.
Right.
And so when they said that I had to go on this excursion, I was like, I don't really want to do this. This is not going to be a good thing for me. Like, I'm not, it's just not going to work out. So we left early in the morning from like a little offset of the airport, like the military side of the airport or whatever. And they put us in this huge plane that had only nets to sit on. So by the time I got from Newfoundland to New Brunswick, my feet were completely numb. I couldn't feel my legs. I couldn't feel my feet. I was horribly sick because I have motion sickness.
Oh.
And you couldn't see out any of the windows. Oh. So you were just sitting there getting jostled around. And then they're like, okay, well, what you should really do is, you should use your belt and you should, belt yourself in.
Yeah.
So we were all just kind of trapped there for, I don't even know how long it was. It was probably a couple of hours, but it was just terrible. And then we got there, and it was mid-afternoon, and instead of letting us, get settled and use the bathroom and stuff like that, they decided that they were going to parade us around the drill square.
Mm-hmm.
So they had us doing drill for, 2 hours.
Oh.
And then after that, they said, well, we want you to eat dinner. Well, dinner was terrible. Because almost everything was frozen and then unthawed.
Yeah.
So, eggs. They'd frozen eggs. And so the eggs were green.
Ooh.
And they still tasted like eggs, but it was just weird.
Green eggs.
there was no ham.
Too bad.
No, there was...
No spam?
There was no ham. I'm sure that they probably did have spam, but that was probably too highbrow for us at the time.
Oh.
I'm sure that was over in the officer's mess. But, so we sat down and we ate, the worst food. Every day we were there, the food was awful. Like, awful. I remember going up and getting tater tots, and the person, serving them to me and, crushing them as they were putting them on my plate so that I had just mush. It was just, yeah. So, yeah, I basically stayed there in, this horrible place for 6 weeks. And I called home, every day and cried into the phone and was like, please get me out of here. Like, this is terrible. So one day my Uncle Joe, who who used to be in the Army. He's long since retired now, but he was stationed close by, and he took me out for pizza, because if you had a family member that could take you off base, then you were allowed to do that. Nice. So I was lucky. There was a lot of people there that were trapped and had to stay there for six weeks and couldn't go anywhere. but I got to go out for pizza. So when we left the pizza place, my uncle was like, you know, do you want to take all the leftovers? So we had ordered like two pizzas. So I brought the pizzas back to my bunk. And then it was like 11 o'clock at night, and we were all sitting in the very back of the bunk. Because it was a larger bunk, but it was a smaller group.
Okay.
So it was like me and like eight other people, and we just sat in the back of the bunk, and we were eating our pizza because we were supposed to be asleep.
Right.
And that was something that they were very strict on, that everybody go to bed, you know, regiment.
Right.
So we're sitting back there, and all of a sudden our sergeant major comes out, and she starts like banging on the beds with a baseball bat.
Uh-huh.
And she's like, you know, you guys are supposed to be in bed. You're supposed to be in bed. Come on, come on. And we were like, really? Like, come on. Like, we were just enjoying pizza.
Oh.
It was really good pizza. So she took the pizza and she threw it out.
Oh.
And then we were all told to go back to bed. It was pretty bad. It was pretty bad.
I'm sorry.
I can't say that I learned nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Because I did learn a lot about leadership. In the way that this is what you don't do.
Okay.
To be a positive role model for somebody.
Okay.
You know, don't be an asshole. You know, let people eat their pizza and then go to bed. But, yeah, no, that was probably the worst place I've ever spent time. And that was six whole weeks. And my parents wouldn't let me come home.
Oh.
They were like, nope, you have to stay there because it's a great experience. And I was like, I don't think so, but okay.
I know how you feel.
Yeah.
My parents sent me away to camp, and I never wanted to go. My oldest sister never got to go to camp, and she always wanted to go.
Oh.
And she's always been a social butterfly.
Yeah.
Me, now I'm a homebody just like you, but they sent me anyway, kicking and screaming the whole way, and I was gone for 4 weeks, and
only 4 weeks.
Yeah. It was cold. It was wet. I didn't know anyone, and I was so shy.
Yeah.
I didn't really talk to people, so I was really alone. But I loved the horses, and I liked being in the woods, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But I was really lonely.
Yeah.
That's probably my worst.
Hmm.
But I did have an experience where I actually got stuck somewhere. I was working at a place, and we had a scaffolding, and I was painting the bottom part, and somebody else was painting the top part, and he was up on the scaffolding, and we were drinking afterwards, early 20s. I was grandfathered in because it didn't change until after I was 18.
Sure.
So somehow, I don't know if I got bet to go up on there or what. I ended up climbing up the scaffolding, and I could not get down. I was terrified of coming down. So, yeah, that was terrible. But he had to come up and slowly help me down. But, yeah, I was terrified. I'm not afraid of heights or anything.
Oh, see, I don't like heights.
I was just afraid to come down off of that.
Yeah. They had, at the cadet camp, they had training on how to rappel. And so they had, like, a 10-story wall that you had to rappel down in order to pass that part of the course. And I did it, but I was like jello.
Oh.
I could not. Because what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to have a lead hand.
Uh-huh.
And you're supposed to ease yourself down.
Yeah.
But you're supposed to support your own weight as well, because you're the one that's doing, you know, it's all you.
Yeah.
It's the you show. So you have to get from the top to the bottom on your own. And the minute I took, like, the first, you're supposed to, like, put yourself off.
Yeah.
And then rappel and slowly let out the line.
Yeah.
Well, by the time I got to, like, the third or the fourth jump, my legs were just jello.
Oh.
So I couldn't really feel them.
Oh,
I was,
no.
like, banging up against the wall.
Oh,
and,
no.
like, my commanding officers were up top. They were like, you gotta straighten out your knees. And I was like, I'm sorry. I just need to get to the bottom and not die.
Well, at least you didn't fall down to the ground, did you?
Oh, God, no.
good.
No, I did not fall. I would have. The instant I got to the bottom, I went over and retched in a bush because I was just so... Yeah, that was bad. It was really bad. But yeah, no, don't like heights, don't like spiders, don't like creepy dolls, don't like clowns, don't really like rappelling.
I don't necessarily not like clowns, but I don't necessarily like them.
Yeah, I don't know.
And I definitely didn't like them near my babies when I'd take them to the circus.
I don't trust anybody that wears a mask like that.
Yeah.
Or like covers their face and I don't know.
Yeah.
It's weird. So really, that summer camp, that was the worst place?
Oh, I hated being away from home.
Yeah.
I mean,
aside from being away from home, it doesn't sound...
No, I never... At least I don't remember any super traumatic
You blocked it things. Out.
I've always liked small spaces. I've always liked... Yeah. I didn't necessarily like the dark, but I liked small, dark places where, you know... There's light coming through. I don't mind heights. I love roller coasters, so I like going really high and dropping down.
I'm not a fan of roller coasters. Not at all.
No, I had a very safe life.
Yeah, I don't know. I think if I look back on the last 36 years, I've probably had it pretty easy, you know, compared to some people. The sergeant major that threw our pizza away...
She ate it.
No, she almost ate it in a different way. She threatened to commit suicide if they did not let her go home.
Oh my god.
For the last 3 weeks, we were completely without the head of our bunkhouse.
Well, that's when you should have gotten the pizza.
Yeah, pizza party really would have capped that off, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So shall we start?
I think it's your bag this week.
Yeah, it's my time to go first.
Without much fight.
Yeah, getting better at this. Okay, so today I'm talking about the Brumder Mansion, which is on Wisconsin Avenue in Milwaukee. Brumder Mansion is a large Victorian-style house that was built in 1910 by George Brumder Sr. He was a successful publisher of German language newspapers, magazines, and sheet music. Unfortunately, he died before the mansion was completed. His son George Jr. and his wife, along with their three children, inherited the home and finished building it. A few years later, George Jr.'s mother Henrietta and sister Emma came to live with them. In the early 1920s, George Jr. sold the mansion to the Pick brothers, Sam and Ed Pick. Sam and Ed Pick? They worked for American Mobster. Can you guess it, Janine?
Can I guess it? Al Capone?
Yes.
Yeah.
They worked for Al Capone. Da 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 da.
Al Capone was around.
Yeah.
Yeah. He actually was running during Prohibition a soda distribution company out of what is now Shaker Cigar Bar in Milwaukee.
Yes, I did know that because I took the haunted tour and it's fun.
Yep, mm-hmm. It is fun.
Okay, so what did they do for Al Capone? They set up speakeasies and nightclubs while dabbling in prostitution, gambling, and illegal liquor. One such speakeasy was set up in the basement of the Brumder Mansion. In the 1930s, after Al Capone went to jail, the Pick brothers began having money problems. They sold the mansion and covered the tunnel and other things with cement. Well, okay, so the speakeasy that was built in the basement of the Brumder Mansion had a tunnel that would went out into a street, and then people could secretly come into the basement where the speakeasy was, and... So that's where the secret tunnel comes from. They also had an entrance that was on the side of the building where people could come in. It is believed that Sam and Ed's crew stole money from the mob that was hidden in the mansion. Most of the crew were murdered. So the new owners who bought the house from, what's her name? Sam and Ed. they were an English couple, and it's possible that the wife was somewhere from the South. As we'll find out later, she had a Southern accent. They turned the mansion into a boarding house for Marquette University. Employees of a nearby large factory and a doctor who lived there had his office there, right there in the mansion. As we will find out later, one of the owner's names was Elizabeth, and she had a 22-year-old daughter, Caroline. In 1948, Our Saints Lutheran Church bought the Brunder Mansion and turned it into a parsonage. Due to expense of upkeep on the mansion and lack of available funds, the mansion fell into disrepair. So in 1996, the Brunder Mansion was sold again as a fixer-upper to Bob and Carol Hershey, who still own it today. The Hersheys lovingly repaired the mansion to its former glory and turned it into a bed and breakfast. Where the speakeasy was once located in the basement, they turned into a theater that seats 75 people, and they have plays and they have musicians come in.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. We'll have to find out if we can go see anything.
Yeah, I think you can visit. I think that they do have tours. I briefly talked about the Brunder Mansion on a past Hauntheads blog post, but it was just kind of nestled in with, you know, nine other haunted locations. So it was a very barren synopsis of what exactly was going on there. But yeah, okay. I think you can do tours. Neat. Like they allow that.
Well, I know you can stay there because it's a bed and breakfast.
Yep.
I think I might stay there one night. All right. With or without the husband, that's the idea. All right. So now on to the good stuff. Carol was the first to mention having paranormal experiences. Around 2005, Bob and Carol began bringing in well-known mediums and paranormal investigators. There have been hard evidence and personal experiences recorded all over the mansion. For 6 years, Bob and Carol had the investigators come in. So now they know most of the spirits' names, except that of a 14-year-old prostitute.
Oh.
They don't know her name, and they don't really know much about her, just that she's there. So the first entity is that of an older woman named Suzanne. Suzanne was the housekeeper to the original Brumder family when she was alive. She appears to be about 50 and blonde, thin. And when people see her, she's wearing Victorian kind of clothes. She's said to be a helper. She likes to know what is going on throughout the mansion. She's very nosy. And has been seen floating on the stairs. And she's also been known to be a golden type orb that floats around. Her favorite room is the gold room. Wherever she goes, there's a smell of lilacs that follow her. She likes to be involved in the renovations of the mansion, and through mediums, she's able to express her likes and dislikes and kind of help Carol and Bob decide what to put where.
Oh, wow.
Yes, she's very bossy.
I wonder what would happen if they just decided to make changes and not consult her.
She'd probably be really mad.
Yeah. But I wonder what would happen.
I wonder if she would throw things.
Yeah, maybe.
Doesn't say anywhere here that she does throw things.
But well, I guess, yeah.
All right.
First time for everything.
So Sam Pick had, one other thing about the Pick brothers. Sam was the more level-headed, smart, kind of ran the whole operation. Ed was kind of not nice and did some nasty things to people. So Sam Pick had a housekeeper named Lorraine. And Lorraine was considered to be feisty, strong-willed, and authoritative. She likes to hang out in the office, the dining room, the parlor, the kitchen, and her favorite room is the Emma room. She has been known to sit on the bed while patrons are sleeping in it, and she will also be seen with air quotes. People have seen a towel floating around the room, but with, you know, a no body there holding it.
Oh, a disembodied towel.
Yes, a disembodied towel. Nice. Now, four times in the summer of 2012, omelets were made and given to customers for breakfast. And usually the customers come in and disappear. So one omelet would be hot and one omelet would be cold, but they were cooked at the same time, brought up the same way. So they believe that Lorraine's the one to do that, to play with the people. Now, in the Emma room, which she is very territorial about, people think that it's her, that while she was alive, it was her bedroom. Oh, I'm doing the thing a lot today.
You are umming a lot.
Okay.
But don't worry, I'll go back to and eliminate a lot of the ums, as I often do.
Okay, so the Emma room, Lorraine is very territorial about. And when people try to put things in a closet that's in there, she'll, like, throw it out. She doesn't want anything in there, and she gets really mad if anyone tries to.
Huh.
So a medium was once poking fun at her, and she said to Lorraine, "I'm going to put all my things in there." And soon after, the medium heard a sigh right by her ear, and then she was punched in the shoulder. Good for Lorraine. Stay out of Lorraine's room. Now, some of the men who work for Sam and Ed Pick are said to still roam the mansion. And many of the men were killed. Apparently, there was some money that was hidden somewhere in the mansion, and then it was gone. And they blamed the Chicago Monsters, blamed Sam and Ed and their men for stealing it. Mm-hmm. So quite a few of Sam and Ed's crew got killed.
Well.
Murdered.
So they were all whacked? Is that the...
Yes, they were whacked.
The term, they were whacked? In the mansion, they were whacked?
It doesn't... Somewhere, most likely, they're in the tunnels.
Oh, yeah.
That are now covered up with cement.
Or they're in Lake Michigan with concrete loafers.
Yeah, that could be it, too. There was a Scottish maintenance man by the name of Doug who worked for the Picks. He took care of the maintenance. He took care of the furnace. He took care of the catacombs. He took care of setting up the speakeasy. He was really trusted. He also helped take care of the high rollers. And he also did some of the not so nice deeds.
Oh.
You know, that gangsters would often have to do. Beating up people or, you know, whatever. Killing people. So when he's been around, he's been seen as a very large, shadowy figure. He's one of the people that were supposedly killed by the other mobsters for stealing the money.
Oh, okay.
In 2013, investigators left some recording equipment on the stage that's in the basement, and they went in to go take a break. And then when they came back, their equipment was carefully, nothing was damaged, was completely taken apart and left neatly on the stage. And later on, when the investigators were upstairs, they caught a male spirit breathing, and they caught that on tape. And for some reason, I'm not sure why it doesn't state in the article, they believe it was Doug.
Oh.
Now, when you came to the speakeasy, the first person you would run into and who would either let you in or not let you in, who really ran the speakeasy, was Joe the Enforcer. And he's considered to still be in the mansion. He was murdered by the bomb because he knew too much. And it was towards, you know, the end of, you know, Sam and Pick. A worker who was working on the building when they were renovating after Carol and Bob bought it, he heard a man yell, "Help! Help!" So he ran to go find out what was going on, and he found himself on the back staircase by the side door, and that's where it said that Joe was shot to death. So people have been known to hear a male voice speaking by the bar in the speakeasy yep. where often Joe would be, you know, taking care of business. Mm. Joe likes to watch over the theater area where the speakeasy was once located. He very much likes the women. He's been known to grab butts.
Oh.
However, Joe is still really angry over his death, and he feels that, you know, he was always trusted.
Yeah.
And he always did a good job, and he shouldn't have been killed. So right. he's angry about that. Then Joe had a guy that worked with him, or for him, who was considered extra muscle. His name was Mike. And Mike likes to stay by the catacombs. He's often near a young spirit by the name of Timmy, and we don't really know who Timmy is. We don't know much about Timmy, just his name is Timmy, and he's like a little boy. You know, could it have been Mike's son or something? Yeah. We don't know. So Mike was killed in the street near the tunnel because he also knew too much, and he was knifed to death.
That's sounds like that's a downside of being...
Yeah.
An enforcer, you know, you come to know too much, and then the next thing you know, you're over and done with.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I don't think I want that job.
Yeah, no, that's fine. And you can send me back to cadet camp.
In 2008, an investigator got a recording of a strong male voice saying, "Look what he can do," followed by two kicks on the boiler. Could he have been talking about Timmy? Maybe. Maybe Timmy kicked it. Because, you know, a young spirit learning how to move things, you know, who
knows? That takes me back to that, is it Saturday Night Live? No. With Stuart, the really pale man-child. Look what I can do. No? Nothing?
Okay. Nothing. I got somebody nothing
there,
on that one.
Somebody out there in podcast land will get it and laugh hysterically.
I don't watch Saturday Night Live too much, and I haven't in the past either.
It was Mad TV. That's what it was.
Didn't watch that Mad either. TV.
Anyway.
And another voice that they heard was, "Leave your guns at the door." So, you know, as people came in, they would take the guns away.
Yep.
In 2012, an investigator asked who was in the room with him, and he got a reply of Mike and Joe. So Mike and Joe were hanging out.
Oh.
All right. Then there's another set of investigators who actually... investigate part-time, but they're actually Chicago cops.
Okay.
And they were in the theater, and they said, "How do you like having policemen in here?" One of the men then saw a moving dark shadow. Then he felt an electrical zap, zing, which left a red mark on his neck.
Oh.
He asked the spirit, "Was it you?" And a male voice answered, "Yeah, that was me." Okay, interesting. So there was an Italian gambler who was caught cheating in the speakeasy.
Yeah.
So most likely Joe or Mike
dealt with him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he is no longer alive.
Right.
And he hangs out down there by the coal room and where the furnace is.
Okay.
He is really angry about his death, and he feels he should not have been killed. He's also kind of creepy. Because he likes to watch the patrons that come down there, and he's kind of stalkerish about it.
Oh.
So he's kind of creepy. Hmm. Now, Ed Pick, of the Pick Brothers, his wife was named Evelyn. And Evelyn was raped by the former handyman of the Brumders. She became pregnant and later died of a miscarriage. Evelyn likes to sit by a window in one of the rooms, and she is thought to be melancholy and calm and nice and just, you know, going about doing her thing. And her favorite rooms in the building are the Gwyneth Room, the Marion Room, and the Gold Suites. Mm. In 2010, an employee of the bed and breakfast saw a misty presence floating above one of the beds in one of those rooms, and they believe it was Evelyn. She likes to help the sick and the elderly, and she's like a helper spirit.
Huh.
And a male customer was spending the night, and he got really ill.
Hmm.
So in the middle of the night, she went to the owner, and she starts screaming in her ear her name, "Carol, Carol!" Like, get up to take care of this man who was really sick.
Oh.
She was also recorded on an EVP in 2012, and she said her 5-year-old daughter, Sarah, died from a fever. She stays at the mansion so she can see her daughter. Now we have another spirit, female spirit named Carolyn, and she's purported to be the daughter of a past owner, Elizabeth. Carolyn is thought to be silly and mischievous. She likes to hide things, such as the owner's hat that went missing that she looked for up and down everywhere, like more than once, more than three times, you know, couldn't find it. She goes back to the beginning of where she looked, and there was the hat right on the bed. She likes to pull pranks on the investigators, and she'll float around them like a ball of light.
Oh, woo!
And she likes to freak out the investigators that don't believe in spirits. She will hide their personal belongings, and they'll go looking for them and all over, and all of a sudden, it'll be back right where they thought it was. During a few EVP sessions, she tried to relate how she died, but they couldn't quite grasp what she was trying to say. Okay. So they think she died either from a really nasty disease or some sort of foul play. Like, it wasn't the nicest of deaths. One couple who was staying at the bed and breakfast said they asked for a sign of a spirit, and she turned off all the lights in the room. When she was asked to turn them on again, she did.
Oh.
So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Wow, it really sounds like the Brumner Mansion is just full of intelligent hauntings.
Yeah.
I mean, if they're interacting with people and hiding things and turning lights on and off when asked, I mean, that's just
kind of crazy. Yeah, I
really want to go. Wow.
And Carolyn's mother in life was Elizabeth. She's considered to be a very comforting, motherly type Southern lady. She has a thick Southern accent. And she likes being in the office and the library and the foyer. In 2012 December, there was an incident at the mansion that disturbed the spirits. Somehow it related, they didn't go into any great detail about what happened, but apparently some investigators were doing things that they weren't supposed to do, like antagonizing the ghosts and going places they weren't supposed to go. They were just
weren't being polite, as you would
say. They were not being polite. They were being mean, I guess. So darn investigators. So for a long time, they didn't want to have anyone in the building. The ghosts were not happy about it.
Right.
So like I said, they didn't want people in. But in 2013, there was an EVP with Carolyn and Elizabeth's voices on it. Carolyn said, get out. Quit it. Elizabeth said, it is best if you leave. I guess the spirits were still angry.
Yeah.
So it took a while for them to be happy again. So while the building, while the mansion was a boarding house, there was a physician who lived there, and he had an office in the mansion. And he's been seen as about 60 years old, and he likes to hang out on the third floor, and he's considered a trickster and has been known to pull out cords from walls, from the vacuum cleaner. They have a hard time vacuuming quite often because he's always pulling it. Wires to, like, computers or lights he'll unplug.
Seems like a strange thing for him to be doing.
Yeah. And he likes to make silly noises and touch people. He likes to be noticed.
So they think that that's attention. The doctor spirit, and that's not the young boy spirit?
Yeah, they think it's the doctor.
Really?
I guess a medium must have told them.
Huh.
So.
That's strange. Because
they're getting a lot of this from the mediums that they brought in.
Yeah.
And, you know, the investigators. So.
Interesting.
I didn't write down what year this was, but Tony and Jeffrey Seelman and Amy Lamb were filming for TV6, and it was a Halloween episode, and while they were filming in the mansion, there was an air vent, and it just flew off the wall for no apparent reason at all. Poop. So it's caught on tape. It's somewhere. I didn't look it up, but maybe I will.
Yeah.
So they the owners, however, think that he's actually there in the mansion, but he's looking for his medical bag. It doesn't say why they think that, but I'm guessing that one of the mediums said, oh, he's looking for his bag.
Right.
So I don't know for sure. And Carol, the owner, had an experience early on where she found droplets of blood in the bathtub, but nobody had been staying there for a number of days. There was nothing on the ceiling to indicate that blood was coming off the ceiling.
I think I remember reading that she even went to a floor above to investigate because she said it was like somebody had left a body or something there and it was dripping.
Yeah, and there was nothing there.
Huh.
So they don't know, you know, where it came from or anything. So I really think the Brumder Mansion is a place to be.
And definitely the place to go if you want to experience an intelligent haunting.
Yeah, and it's not too expensive to spend a night.
No, I think it's like, relatively reasonably priced. I don't think
like
it's...
Yeah, like $175, and depending upon the time you're there, it could be a little higher during holidays and stuff.
And then, you know, for breakfast you get omelets, and you get a hot one and a cold one.
Yeah.
And so you have variety. It's awesome.
It sounds good. It sounds like a really fun place to go. I would definitely go there.
That's another one to add to our list.
Yeah.
That list that's gradually becoming mountainous.
Yes. What do you have, Janine?
Well, this week I wanted to talk about Wisconsin Death Trip, which is a movie that was produced in 1999. It was made using photographs from, let me see here, Charles von Schaik, who was a local photographer in Black River Falls, Wisconsin.
I know his name for during some reason, the time. So I must have seen something.
He took some like 30,000 images, and a lot of those images were used in the film to kind of convey all of the craziness that was happening in Black River Falls at that time.
Oh.
So if you want to watch Wisconsin Death Trip, you can view it for free on YouTube.
Was it good?
It was very good.
Good.
I thought it was very good. I thought it was adequately creepy.
Okay.
The only thing that I don't really like about it is there are times when the narrator does like a whisper, like a creepy whisper. And sometimes you can hear what he's saying and sometimes you can't hear what he's saying. And he's talking about people. I think it's supposed to be the voice of whoever was running the asylum in those days, reading from the check-in book. So he's writing down all of his notes about these people that have been remanded to his care.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. The newspaper of the time, it was run by an Englishman.
Can you remind me what the date was?
The date of the movie? Or the date of what happened there?
Yeah, the date of what happened there.
1800s. So between 1890 and 1900.
Okay.
Yeah, so the Englishman's name was Frank Cooper. And so the information that they're reading is from actual newspaper clippings from the time.
Oh, I like that.
So it's very interesting. It's a really interesting watch. There's little explanation for the events that took place in the small town of Black River Falls, Wisconsin at the end of the 19th century. Between 1890, the town, populated mostly by German and Norwegian immigrants, fell victim to a rash of occurrences that very, very nearly brought the town and all that lived there to complete downfall. And then, as I said, Charles von Schaik documented all of these events in a series of photographs that, you know, like 30,000 of them.
Wow.
And what he captured on film was evidence of just vagrancy run rampant and madness and murder-suicide pacts and the utterly unexplainable. People there, I guess, around this time just went insane. Some argue that the film, sharing the same name as the book from it was released in 1973, so that was also called Wisconsin Death Trip, is shown through a particular lens, and it's set in such a way that almost sensationalizes what happened. So others have said that the newspaper man, Frank Cooper, wrote the newspaper accounts of these incidents in such a way that promoted both fear and chaos. So if he had simply written obituaries for these people, maybe it wouldn't have been as graphic and as chaotic as if he had been like, well, you know, so-and-so was found this morning hanging from a tree because they committed suicide or whatever.
Well, it is
you know,
pretty dramatic, and it is pretty...
Sure, but as is the case with a lot of news, it completely depends on the person who is mm-hmm. giving you the information, right. how that information is going to be laid out, and then, because it's such a subjective experience, how the reader is going to take that information and assimilate it to give to other people. So I think that that was maybe a little bit of what was going on.
So he wanted to make it more than it actually was.
That's what they say. But that's what some people say.
But it, yeah, I'll have to watch it. Thank you.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting.
Wisconsin Death Trip.
Wisconsin Death Trip.
Okay.
I would not recommend sitting down and watching the movie and reading the book in one sitting.
Oh, is that what you did?
Because it's very depressing. So the film is basically a collection of Von Schaick's photos with a voiceover. As I said, they were actual articles that were taken from the town newspaper. And then they regularly interject with stylized reenactments. So if it says, you know, the two boys walked across the field and went to this farm and killed the farm owner and, you know, took over the farm and da-da-da, then they have little kids playing the parts of these two boys and they're walking around and doing whatever the narrator says that they're doing. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of filmy, too.
Do you happen to know if in the area they grew rye? Because I know that hundreds of years ago mm-hmm. that when they were growing rye, because they used to make, you know, pumpernickel bread, mm-hmm. rye, the fields sometimes became moldy. And the rye caused people to go a little nuts when they ate it. They got very sick.
Really? Yeah. Well, maybe that's another... Another avenue we'll have to explore.
Right.
Because, I mean, basically, you know, this particular time in the 1800s was full of hardship and, you know, a growing sense of depression. Not only people, you know, mentally becoming depressed, but a commercial depression that really took a toll on the residents of Black River Falls. The town at this point in time, between 1890 and 1900... was enduring the worst financial crash and commercial depression that the country had ever known. It's entirely possible that this had something to do with all of the craziness that happened. Another point to make is that many of these immigrants, these Norwegian and German immigrants, came in hopes of either growing their family or starting their family in Black River Falls because it was advertised that the land there was very cheap. And so you could invest very little money and you were supposed to get, you know, your money back tenfold.
Right.
Well, when people got there from Germany and Norway, they realized that the land wasn't really worth anything.
Oh.
It was pretty worthless. So they were all very frustrated. It even got to a point, it got so bad that the railroad that actually ran through Black River Falls that was supposed to have been an asset for the area, mm-hmm. because as a small town, you want to be on a railway line.
Right.
They were actually offering young men who wanted to leave the area free board.
Oh, wow.
So you can board our trains and we will take you anywhere other than this place. And a lot of people actually took them up on that. Shortly after the financial crash took place, people began acting strangely. And stories of ghosts and witchcraft just swirled. Reports of random violence, shootings, and suicide spiked. Residents took their lives and were found hanging in their barns or from trees on their properties. And then I've got a list of some of these instances, some of the things that occurred. A couple of these are a little graphic, so if you're kind of faint of heart, you might want to skip ahead. This is probably the most creative way of committing suicide I've ever read. It was pretty interesting. A farmer blew off his own head by placing it over a hole that he had filled with dynamite, and then he lit the fuse.
Wow.
Yeah. Isn't that creative?
That's very creative.
It's pretty creative. I mean, horrifying, and what a way to go. But
I would never have thought of that.
Creative.
Why not just take one bullet?
And yeah. It seems quicker. You know, you're like looking at your watch, waiting for the fuse to burn down.
Maybe lighting the fuse is actually easier than
yeah. I don't know. A woman concerned about the rash on her back went outside and doused herself in gasoline and then lit a match and self-immolated.
Oh my gosh, that's horrible.
A young mother took her children for a day at the beach and drowned them one by one while the others watched.
Do you know how many she had?
It doesn't say here how many she had.
That's so sad. Did she finally kill herself?
It doesn't say that either. Aww. A 15-year-old girl burns her employer's barn and house because she wanted some excitement, quote-unquote. She had apparently burned several buildings of previous employers just for shits and giggles.
Okay. Were there people in the houses?
I don't know. A recently divorced man shot his wife and his family dead in the town square.
Oh, wow.
A young man attempted suicide by laying on the train tracks. He had only been living in Black River Falls for about a month. It took four men to remove him from the tracks, and then after this incident happens, he's never seen or heard from again. So we don't know if he was successful or not.
I wonder, you know, was it like his legs were there, or because they had to remove him from the tracks?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't even read it like that.
Do you know if there's any pictures?
I don't know if there. I don't think that there are going to be any pictures of that. I think most of the pictures that I've seen are of family portraits or people who died due to tuberculosis. There was a tuberculosis outbreak. So there's lots of pictures of little kids in coffins and stuff like that. Hmm. Because back then that would be the only picture that they would have of, you know,
their loved ones. I'm very curious as to what that would look like.
You think so?
I know, I'm creepy.
I don't know. I just read it as he attempted suicide by lying on the train tracks, but the people pulled him away before anything happened. That was the way that I read it.
Oh, see, the way
because then
I
he was
heard
never
it,
seen or heard from again.
Yeah. And the way I heard it was that he attempted it.
Oh,
and
but he got
they
his
peeled
legs
him
or
off.
Oh. I don't think so, but I don't know.
All right.
Yes,
people, I am really out there.
You're in good company. So, a farmer decapitates all of his chickens, convinced that the devil has overtaken his farm.
Oh, poor chickens.
Poor chickens. A family offers lodging and food to a drifter who, immediately after the family goes to sleep, shoots them all before shooting himself. Former school teacher, now addicted to cocaine and traveling the country by train, is admitted to the insane asylum for her propensity to break windows. She had been arrested and institutionalized scores of times for the same activity. When you watch Wisconsin Death Trip, I really think that she is the protagonist.
Okay.
I think that that's because they keep going back to her.
Oh.
So she's a pretty interesting character.
Okay.
A 10-year-old boy and his brother run away from home and kill the owner of a remote farm by shooting him in the head. They live on the property for some time before being discovered by the farmer's brother. The younger boy is immediately caught while the older flees the scene. Authorities capture the older boy, but not before he shoots one of the men dead. And then the boy is sentenced to life in the penitentiary.
Ooh.
Apparently, the authorities had asked his parents what they wanted done with him, and his parents basically disowned him and told them to do whatever they saw fit with him. Yep.
Do you have ages or no?
Life in the penitentiary. He was 10.
Okay.
And then his younger brother was 7 or 8, I think.
Just a baby. So yeah. I wonder if their names are there, if we can look up and see what happened to him in the penitentiary.
I don't know. Probably. I mean, there's got to be some sort of record.
Have to research that.
Somewhere. Today, Black River Falls is a tourist destination, and roughly 3,600-ish people live there.
Yeah, I've been past there and through there, and it's kind of smallish.
Well, yeah, and I mean, people come for, like, the shopping and the camping and the fishing and stuff like that. Downtown is filled with all of these little small shops that you can go window shopping.
It's a beautiful area around
there. There's tons of restaurants. So, I mean, the town that you'll see if you visit Black River Falls now is nothing like what you would see in Von Schaich's photographs.
Yeah.
Nothing at all. It's
Are any of the
changed.
Buildings still there, do you know?
I do not.
Okay.
I do not know. I would imagine that a lot of those small storefronts downtown in the downtown area are probably original.
Yeah.
Or have been upkept, you know. Okay. Small towns usually do that. They usually take an interest in that versus big cities that are like, can we put a mega mall here? Yes. Yeah. And then they raise the Victorian mansion to the ground and put up a mire.
Such a shame. You know? Such a shame. Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, to this day, there are no explanations for the behaviors of the residents. And answers will likely never be found.
Right.
I mean, we'll probably never know what happened there. But despite that fact, there will always be speculation. You know, people will always be looking into this to try to figure out what the hell happened.
I wonder if they could exhume a body from that time period, if the body would have a story to tell.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Very interesting.
I never knew that about Black River Falls.
Yeah,
I'm going to watch that movie tonight.
You know, the reason why I wanted to do Black River Falls on air, because I did do a blog about it on the Hauntheads blog, was a friend of mine actually went there recently to go antiquing. And I was like, oh, you're going to Black River Falls, and kind of made a big deal about it. And he was like, what are you talking about? And he knew nothing about it.
Oh.
And I'm from Canada, so like I don't know a lot about Wisconsin. I haven't been to a lot of places in Wisconsin.
Right.
But the minute I heard about Black River Falls, I was like, this is crazy. You know, this falls into the realm of the insane. Like, what happened?
I've lived here all my life. I've never heard anything about that.
Yeah, like, what's going on?
I want to look into that more because I find that fascinating here, you know, where I'm from.
Right. Yep. Yeah, and I find actually, too, that the more we do this and the more we create episodes, we learn a little bit more about Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Which I think is kind of cool.
Yeah.
I mean, there's been a lot of Midwest content.
Right.
But, you know, learning a bit more about where you're actually living is...
That's why I've been focused on only Wisconsin places.
Yeah. Yeah. Trying to find new places to explore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What I have to do is find that haunted steakhouse because I love steak and I love ghosts.
Steak and ghosts. And beer.
Perfect mix.
Steak and ghosts and beer.
I think it's in Mequonago, which I've never been to.
So. How far away is Mequonago?
I don't know. I'd say maybe 45 minutes, maybe an hour.
I was going to say about an hour.
Yeah. Well, this was a fun episode.
This was a fun episode. And we both learned something.
Yeah.
Because I learned more about the Brumder Mansion than I knew. I didn't know that it was a that much of a front for mob activity.
Yeah. Oh, there's a whole bunch of places in Wisconsin that are...
Yeah.
The Eagles Club used to have...
Yep.
There was... On the corner of Humboldt North, there was an old building there that was a bar for many years. Now it's... I think it's vacant now. But they had a speakeasy in the basement... Yeah, Milwaukee was actually a very big thing. And, you know, Al Capone had a cabin up north somewhere.
Yeah.
We almost went past it, but we didn't. So, yeah, Milwaukee was a big place.
Yeah. Well, in the Rave or the Eagles Ballroom.
Yep.
That's named for, wasn't the eagle a symbol of the Oddfellows?
Oh, I don't know that.
Because if you go into the Eagles Ballroom, they actually have eagles that are looking down. And it's said that they had rituals there.
Oh.
For the Order of the Oddfellows.
I know that in the basement there's a pool.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of happenings around the pool area.
Yeah, when that place opened, it had several bars and a pool and a bowling alley and a barber shop.
Wasn't it a gentleman's only type place?
It was. Yeah. It was. And you could go in there, and it was almost like how they're... I kind of hate to draw these things, these two ideas together, but if you go to, like, a superstore, you can get your eyeglasses and your haircut and your, you know, whatever, and then buy clothes and then leave. And you only have to go to one place and get it done. Well, that's kind of what that location was for Oddfellows members. They would go in, and they would get everything done that they had to do, and then they would have their meeting, and then they would go home.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's pretty interesting. There's actually a blog about that, too, on the Hauntheads blog. So, Mimi, if you're interested in checking that out, or if anybody out there in podcast land is interested in checking it out,
Hauntheads,
it is there. It is available. So, yeah.
I'm still having a hard time listening to myself on the podcast. Just can't pull the trigger.
Oh, you gotta get over it. You just gotta get over it. Pull that trigger. All right, guys. I think that is it for us this week. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back here again soon. Next week. Yeah. Just being cool and awesome. And like I've said before, don't forget to send in your creepy happenings, your folklore tales, you know, all those good "it happened to a friend of a friend of mine" stories.
Mm-hmm. Or anything at all you want to share.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, anything creepy at all, just send it our way, and we'll kind of wade through it, and we'll create some little mini episodes, and
sounds good. You know,
we'll sit down, and Mimi will read them in her voice that she hates, and I will read mine in my voice that I love to hear talk, and it'll be great. So, all right, guys. Well, you guys have a great week. Thank you so much for listening.
All right. Thank you. Take care.
All right. Bye, guys. Hey guys, thanks for listening to this week's episode. For more Hauntheads, check out our blog at WordPress. You can find it at hauntheads.wordpress.com. We'd also like to thank you for your iTunes reviews, because your reviews will help us improve, and we value them greatly. You can find our podcast on Stitcher, Podcast Addict, Podbean, Pocket Casts, iTunes, iHeartRadio, Google Play, Podknife, and Blueberry. And don't forget to send us your paranormal stories or favorite folklore tales. You send them our way, we'll read them on the show. It's awesome. So you can send those to hauntheadscast@gmail.com. Keep listening and stay spooky.